You're listening to Clouser on Business. Thanks for coming back. I'm Clouser, your host. Thanks for being with us today. Well, I hope you enjoyed last week's podcast on leadership and how successful people start their day. Got some good feedback from listeners. And Heidi is in the studio today again. And how do you start your day out, Heidi?
I generally start my day out with a nice big glass of cold water and a workout. It kind of opens my eyes in the morning.
Do you, get right up and run at it, or do you take some reflective time like the author of the article that we were discussing last week suggested to do?
Yeah, if I remember, I generally tend to think that having a little bit of reflective time, even if it's just for 5 or 10 minutes, either some quiet meditation time. Sometimes I'll do that actually when I stretch before I work out. I just take some time to think about my day. And a smart person once told me that, especially on really busy weeks, to rather than feel overwhelmed when you're getting after it in the morning, to write down maybe 3 things that you want to get accomplished during the day, and that will help focus you a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from some other readings over the course of my career, I can think of, and I forget who the author is, so I apologize, but the suggestion was keep a pad of paper and a pencil, you know, near your bedside or maybe your easy chair when you're at home. And because once the mind knows that you've put those thoughts someplace, the mind can go on about its job and somehow relieves that pressure that you have to remember or recall. So
yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I think when I write it down, that means I have to hold myself accountable to those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again to William Vanderblumen for allowing us to use his article as a basis there for our discussion last week. And I didn't mention it last week, but Heidi was out on a special assignment and for the podcast. And what'd you bring back to us, Heidi?
Chickens.
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 Where'd you find chickens at?
Well, I've been actually interested in some research done out of Purdue University on
Boilers.
Social behavior. There are a lot of people who are taking the work that this biologist is doing and applying it to other social groups and then just conducting their own studies. So really, this research assignment, it started off with chickens, and now it kind of has led to other experiments that people are doing among animals and humans.
Okay, so do tell how that's a business topic, would you?
Sure. So first, maybe I should just explain the experiment. This experiment by William Muir is his name at Purdue. He wanted to find out what leads to greatest productivity. And so after all of these experiments, really it comes back to productivity in the workplace and how you get productive workers, how you get productive teams, how you get productive businesses in the end, how all of those things kind of move together. So William Muir decided that he would look at one type of animal that had a way of looking at productivity in a very real way. So how do you know if chickens are productive?
Well, the first thought that would come to my mind was the number of eggs they might lay in a day.
That is exactly his theory. So what he did was basically take one group of chickens that was your normal, average, everyday flock of chickens. And he put those, that was his sort of one group. You could call them just your average worker chickens. And would study sort of how productive they were over the course of time. He took a different flock that he made, he selected by hand, and these were from a variety of flocks. He would pick the most productive chickens within those flocks and then put them all together as the second group. So over the course of 6 generations, well, first of all, what do you think he would find? Who was going to be the most productive overall? Your average worker flock or your super chicken flock?
Well, I would imagine the answer is the super chicken flock as you describe it, but sometimes you can get an average chicken motivated as well.
Well, over the course of these 6 generations, in the end, the average worker flock of chickens were all plump, healthy, well-fed, and were actually more productive in terms of egg count overall.
Really, the average ones?
The average chickens.
Wow.
And guess what happened to the super chickens?
Hey, just let me tell the audience, I do not, that was a guess on my part. I was trying to be funny and I turned out, got, it's like,
you were correct.
It's like picking football winners, but go ahead.
Oh,
sorry.
And the super chickens, how do you think that they fared?
I'm not sure.
In the end, all but three, after six generations, all but three of the super chickens were dead.
Really? And why was that?
And the rest were pretty sad looking, by the way. They had pecked each other to death, basically. Their mentality and the way that they worked together in their flock was by sort of aggression and dysfunction, which led to less productivity overall than the average worker chicken flock.
Wow. So how do you relate that to management?
Well,
I'm in the wrong group. Get me out.
I think that what's been really interesting is, so people have been taking Dr. Muir's work and applying it elsewhere to other areas of science. So like I said, to human behavior. So, I mean, one of the things that our society tells us is that, you know, in order to be successful or to get ahead, you need to, you know, compete, really. You have to go to the right school. You have to get the right job. In order to get to the top, you have to be the highest seller. And, you know, most of the time when that happens, it your success ends up feeding off of the failure of other people. And so with that mentality that our society sort of stokes, it doesn't always lead to the most productive teams. So if you, you know, think about it in terms of people who are in teams, or, you know, your average, you know, super chicken team, if you will, you know, you can see that maybe if you hired, you know, the Steve Jobs and all the, you know, the Phil Knights, and you put them all on a team together, I'm not necessarily sure that they would do anything but what the super chickens did.
Yeah, what do you think that would have looked like if that could have been possible? I mean,
well, so that's a great thing to think about, because while you would think that these are some of the most creative minds in their fields, but they're very probably opinionated, and they all have a different type of ways of going about their jobs and different visions. And so
they approach it, you know, in a way that they think is best.
Right. And so it kind of would depend upon the personality, but the theory would be, if you're sticking with the results of the super chickens, that they would not be able to get along very well. And who knows how productive or creative they would be if they were tasked to do something or to run a business together. I'm not sure how successful that would be.
Yeah. In your research, I don't know if you have this answer or not, but was there any reason that chickens were chosen amongst other animal types? Maybe it was the easiest to get the quicker generation.
So that was the first experiment, and they've gone on to do then bovine experiments. So they were using a lot of sort of, well, what you would expect at Purdue, farm animals.
Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. people have now, there are people in the Netherlands studying this, and they're actually going in and talking to business owners and executives about how their humans are behaving too in, mm-hmm. in groups. And basically it's how to, because innovation is such a buzzword these days in business, and, you know, it's how to get your team's thinking creatively and being productive and doing that in a way that it increases business or it increases the success of your particular business, whatever that may be.
Okay, so let's take this into the office. We're all around the conference table. How are we going to choose the team that's going to be on this project? I mean, maybe I've got a number of people on staff that are, quote, the super chickens, and I've got the rest of the people I'm going to choose from. What do you think is the best way to go about establishing that team?
Well, I think you definitely need to set expectations at the beginning, because if you have to include the super chickens in some way, that I think that setting the bar up front that, hey, the success of this team, whatever they're tasked to do, has to be foundationally built on the success of everyone as a whole. And so, you know, that's why some of the things that I've read about this, not all sort of monetized rewards of some doing better over the others. You know, that works maybe in sales rooms or something like that. But in regular businesses where people are collaborating and are chosen to be in groups or in teams for reasons, that setting the expectation up front that really everyone else's success will depend on the success of the product or whatever you're producing, that may be one way.
Yeah. Did the research speak to anything on, since we're in the farm community, how the farmer should go about picking that team? I mean, so let's put it in the office, how the manager, the project manager is going to choose those 5 or 6, 10 people maybe that are on that team. Anything come out of the research on that?
No, I didn't hear anything about what the farmer would do, but
it's okay. You can laugh.
In terms of what some people talked about in the research was that what worked well was selecting people who they knew could get along and work together. So the only you would know what sort of personalities. They weren't saying very specific personality types, but you know, making sure that even the super chickens knew that they had people that they would have to be able to cooperate with and be able to communicate with. And I will say also that in what I've read about this, your average flock of successful chickens, those are not sort of any less, I would say, have any less intellectual acumen than the super chickens. It's more of a personality driven thing. So, mm-hmm. You know, the ability to be creative to, and not just, you know, the regular average flock of chickens, they had disagreements. It's not like it was, you know, some utopia, some farm utopia where all the chickens got along all the time, you know, and I think that that's really important in business too, because you need to have a team that's going to be able to challenge each other mm-hmm. to be able to, you know, that's how good ideas are built off of, you know, failure, trying things and failing, or criticism that everyone needs to be able to take in a positive manner and move forward with. So, you know, that's how you evolve, you get better, you create new, different products or your teams are successful for, you know, for what they each bring to the table and how they work together.
Yeah. I've seen over the course of my career, you got great people that are working for you. They all have different skill sets and talents. And in one area of the company, they've probably been or have been great producers on top of their game. And it seems like, okay, people think, and this just might be human management behavioral thinking, that, okay, hey, Joe did a great job over there. Hey, we'll put him on this project. Well, the two projects were totally different. So Joe's highly successful on one project, comes over to this other team, and he, you know, he fails miserably.
Yeah, and I think part of that, so in order to not have something like that happen, to avoid that, would be to create an environment where Joe would be able to succeed by utilizing the help of teammates, maybe playing to Joe's strengths rather than having it be a learning opportunity. I know in my particular line of business, we've had several people go out on maternity leave recently, which has kind of created this big hole because we haven't hired new people. So in order to kind of get the work done, we've had to shift projects around and kind of be creative in who gets certain accounts. And, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, well, you know, I need some, it would be really great for me to learn about 3 new topics that would really help me in the future. But what if I'm really strong in 3 topics that I know I can get the work done? Doesn't really make sense to put me on the ones that have a higher learning curve when all I'm trying to do is cover at the end of the day and take on that extra workload, right? So playing mm-hmm. to strengths is also really important sometimes.
Well, I just think it's best to have, you know, 1 or 2 people on that team, maybe one that have, you know, that's the drive behind getting the project done. And then the rest of the teammates, you know, are people that have the skill sets and, you know, can pull through where the leader maybe isn't as strong. Instead of putting, I think this is the gist of what the research is saying, is you put 3 competitive leaders on a team, and the focus of the project's going to be them outperforming each other. and they've lost sight of, hey, the company wants us to get this done by, you know, June 15th, and they fought all along or tried to outcompete, and June 15th comes up and they have nothing to show for it.
That's a really good point. I like what you said there about having foresight or losing sight of what's really important. I think that when you are in the middle of competition, you often will lose sight if you're infighting sort of that way or trying to get a leg up on somebody else on your team. You completely lose sight of what's important, right? Or creating a better end product, whatever that may be, if you're all working to keeping your eyes on the prize in a way.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, this has been interesting. So any other application to management you have there on this?
Yeah, so one of the, I will say there's a little bit more research. So MIT was really interested in this. They also caught wind of the chickens, and they wanted to see sort of how people solve problems. So they brought in hundreds of volunteers. They put them into groups. They gave them really hard problems that people had to solve. And what was interesting was that the high achieving groups were not the ones that had the one or two people with the super high IQs. These were, instead they had to have three characteristics that the really successful teams had. They showed high degrees of social sensitivity to each other. It's measured by something that they're calling reading the mind in the eyes test. It's considered the test for empathy, basically. The groups that scored highly on this did better. Secondly, the successful groups gave roughly equal time to each other, so that no one voice dominated, that there were, you know, that they were all working together in a really sort of in a nice way. I mean, everyone got their voice in, but not at the expense of the few that maybe wouldn't necessarily speak up.
Yeah, you didn't have to fight for the input time or have to be talked over.
Yep, exactly. And then the last piece, third, the more successful groups had more women in them, actually.
Why do you chuckle, Heidi?
You know, they thought that they brought in sort of, so the women, the female groups, showed that they had higher levels of empathy, that they were brought in more diverse perspective, but we don't actually really know on that. I just think it's funny because, well...
Well, I've worked with countless women in business, and I'd be the first to say that some of the ones I worked for were a lot better than some other men that I worked for. But setting that aside, I was always taught never to underestimate a woman's intuition, either in life in general. But so that finding there doesn't surprise
me. Yeah, or maybe helping the group overall work better together. Yeah. I know that. I like teams. We have lots of women who are really good at working with everyone, but I'm not saying that men aren't bad. I just recently had a great group retreat with my team, and we did a couple of fun team building exercises. And so it was really interesting to kind of see how that dynamic played out. So
how'd your teammates do on that? I mean, just in general, I mean, was it, did everyone enjoy it, or did you have people on there that maybe over-enjoyed it or that didn't want to participate at all?
We actually had a couple who were really quiet at first and had really didn't want to have any input. But then as we sort of – this was a trade-off exercise where we had to number 1 through 15. We were on a survival raft in the middle of nowhere, and it was sort of like which of the goods on the list we thought would come in handy from 1 to 15 – and so it was about how we had to choose our top, we had to number it all together after we did so individually and agree upon what those top items and those bottom items were going to be. And so we had to work it out around our group. And I think that once we started doing that, some of the more quiet ones jumped in and were kind of interested because it was sort of like listening to the rationale of what other people had to say. And so, you know, when you ask groups like that to sort of think together about how they're going to come up with a unanimous choice about something, really being able to have the conversation as to why each person thinks what. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't all have to agree, but it was about getting the raft to help or an island. And so we kind of had to figure out together, you know, which materials would be most successful.
What do you think your company gained from that exercise?
I'm not sure exactly yet. I think that it was just a fun way for us to learn more about each other. We aren't all in the same office, so it was nice to kind of be playing in groups where you don't get to see those people on a daily basis. And so doing something that was not just working on a project and kind of taking the time to have a team lunch together and do this fun exercise, you know, where, and we laughed a lot, I will say. So when you have times like that, this exercise didn't take very long. So it's not like we were wasting productivity wise that and for that long. But, you know, I think it was just kind of a fun bonding. And when you get to laugh with your colleagues that you don't get to see face to face and do something like that, I think that was important.
Yeah. Okay, good. Hey, so back to herding chickens here for a second as we close. what you leave our listeners with, maybe on the management side, the ownership side, maybe an insight, and then from the team players, what do you got there?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that struck me when I was reading on about the chickens is that maybe on the leadership side, you know, we currently have all sorts of ways of measuring performance, one individual's performance. And, you know, sometimes there are monetary rewards that are accompany particular goals. And I think that one of the things that makes teams more successful is to not just have selfish goals all the time. It's if you have to have something in your performance management packet that is how well you're working with your teammates and how supportive are you. If you're a middle manager and you have a bunch of kind of younger staffers that you're working with, how well are you coaching them? How well are you having them get along with each other? And I think that there's a lot to be said for something like that. And it's not just the number of widgets that you put out that what you should be getting measured on performance-wise.
Yeah. All right. Hey, well, this has been interesting. I'll be more careful on the assignment next time so you don't come back with who knows what.
Yeah. Giraffes.
Yeah, giraffes. Okay, I hope not. Anyway, so yeah, this has been interesting. Appreciate William Mears' experiment back there at Purdue University, and for allowing us to use it here in our discussion today. Hey, I wanted to alert you to some upcoming podcasts, especially here in the next couple of weeks, because a few weeks ago we had the podcast on using earbuds, listening to music, et cetera, at the office, whether it was productive or not productive. So I'm going to be interviewing some actual users of those earbuds and get some honest feedback, and also be talking maybe to a couple of business owners about the same topic. Well, hey, well, we appreciate your listenership here. Appreciate those people around the world, especially there in Germany and Australia. Really appreciate the number that's listening to us out there. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at clouseronbusiness.com. And if you would be kind and go to iTunes and do a review on us, that would help us immensely here. And we appreciate you sticking with us. And we're out of time today. You've been listening to Clouser on Business.